parent, neighbor, worker, spouse, high-level memory is presumed for most of our societal roles. But with age, for some, comes serious memory loss and an accompanying social dislocation. Dawn Hemingway is the president of the BC Psychogeriatric Association. She's the chair of the social work program at the University of Northern British Columbia, and she's one of the co-directors of the BC Network for Aging Research. And she joins me now by phone from her home in Prince George. Good morning, Dawn, and welcome back.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
How common is memory loss as people get older?
Well, memory loss as we get older is extremely common, and I think not just when you turn 65, but we all start to notice it, that, you know, maybe you forget the keys, where are they, or those kinds of things. But what we usually do as we get older, we start to, you know, keep track of ourselves and compensate in different ways. So we may keep lists of things, or in my case, if you saw my daily planner, you'd see little yellow stickies on the outside, which I pull off when I've done the thing I have to do. So, you know, so we're able to compensate in a lot of ways. And so, in fact, all of us are going to experience some decline in our memory loss as we get older. Usually doesn't affect our day-to-day living at all, though. What more significantly does is if we develop a memory loss that is more substantial and that is related to one or another kinds of dementias, which really becomes more of a significant health issue. And it usually isn't just memory loss. There's other issues that arise as well.
And is this dementia more common for some than other people?
Well, the latest statistics that we have, based on the Canadian Study of Health and Aging and using some Stats Canada population projections, indicate that in BC right now we have about over 60,000. They're projecting about 61,000 people in BC that have dementia. And then if you move that over to the whole country, it's about 420,000. So it's quite a large number of people. The prevalence in different groups is less well known, although there does appear to be a gender difference. And so, for example, the estimates in BC right now are by gender about 41,000 women and 20,000 men. And of course, one of the most obvious things one would say is that's because women live longer, right? But there's that. It doesn't look like that's all that it is. But there's not really definitive research about the reasoning for that at this point in time.
Now, Alzheimer's is, I take it, one of these, one of the common forms of dementia.
And
it's a disease where there's a progression of memory loss. So what kind of challenges do people face in the earlier stages of this disease?
Boy, there's really a lot of issues at the earlier stages. Let me just say first that at the earlier stages now, we have a lot more people because we've been able to identify people earlier. And so, in fact, there's the fear, I suppose, is one of the first things, especially if you know, if you've been given a diagnosis of probable early Alzheimer's disease, because we still don't really know, actually, until we have a look at the brain after death, whether it really was, but we're getting better at it. And if you have that diagnosis and you go and look, you know, into what Alzheimer's is, of course, it can be very concerning, to put it mildly, and depressing, actually, to look at what the prospects are. And then there's struggles about whether you can stay at work, because a lot of people have quite productive lives now in the earlier part of experiencing dementia, and in particular Alzheimer's disease. So there's just the decision-making process about what are you going to do now that you're in this situation. Now, I want to say two things, I guess. One is that one of the huge challenges I think people face as they get older, develop dementia, and perhaps we don't just develop some memory loss. There's other things that come along with it. And so one of the challenges is finding the kinds of support that you may need in order to be able to carry on your life in the best way possible for you. And from my perspective, in the work that I do, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have, making sure that we have the appropriate supports for people, but also the flexibility in the way we provide those supports. And I think that, for me, is a huge issue. We tend to look at providing healthcare supports in a dollar and cents, from a dollar and cents viewpoint. So what's the bottom line about how to deliver a service? So we end up with situations where, first of all, there's cuts. And we know in this province right now, for people who are developing dementia, who need perhaps some supported housing, ultimately may need to be in a care facility, so to have 24-hour support, that those places are simply not there in a lot of communities. And, of course, that adds to the stress for the individual. It adds to the stress for the family. So, to me, that is a really big concern. Similarly, at the earlier stages of the disease, when people may need some home support that would really, you know, make life as close to normal as possible, it's getting more and more difficult to get that kind of support at home. And there's a lot more assumption around the family playing a role in doing that. And, of course, most families want to, but then we get into a whole other side of things, which would probably be a whole interview on its own, which is caregiving and the horrendous impact that providing care plus working can have on family members who are trying to support someone who's going through the progression of a dementia like Alzheimer's disease. So those are some of the things.
Well, what about medication, for example, to manage some of the symptoms in the earlier stages? Are those covered presently for most people by the public service, or are they highly expensive and therefore accessible only to people with greater money?
Really excellent question, and it may surprise people listening that there are several medications now that are available for people with Alzheimer's disease at the earlier stages, and lots of testing going on about how they can be used at the moderate and later stages as well. Unfortunately, those medications are not covered by our medical services plan in British Columbia. And the thing that's perhaps shocking to me is that they're covered in every other province except Newfoundland and Labrador and our province. And so you do have the situation where people do not access those medications because they don't have the financial wherewithal to do that. Or, in my experience in doing some of the research I've done, is that people start the medication, but they stop it quickly if they don't notice an improvement because they're putting out this money that they don't have on their pension, or family members are helping support them. And so you don't even have the opportunity to really get a sense of whether the medication is working. And, of course, if you have a progressive disease like Alzheimer's disease, working might mean that it's stabilizing the symptoms, not that it's improving them. So, you know, it's to me, that's one of another big issue that needs to be addressed in this province. And I should say, you know, that there's some pretty exciting things, though, happening with people who are at the early stages of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. They've actually, over the last 10, 15 years, have been organizing themselves, have support and self-advocacy groups across Canada, certainly very active in British Columbia. And one of those groups is up here in Prince George, and a few years back took the initiative to develop a petition, you know, for the provincial government to say, we need these medications to be covered, went and talked to our MLAs and to the Northern Caucus. And so there is really an active group of early stage people who are trying to both let people in the community know that, hey, we're still here, we're functional, we've got lots to offer, but also to try to put pressure on so that those kinds of supports, in fact, are available. So that piece is really exciting, I think, that people are taking that initiative themselves. But we have to be able to provide those supports in response to that initiative, in my view.
Well, certainly at the advanced stages, it would seem to me the amount of support and service is even greater that's required. What kinds of services and supports are really needed at that term of the dementia?
At the advanced stages, the really advanced stages, you're probably going to have your loved one in a care facility. And, of course, that presents a whole number of issues. I mentioned earlier that there really aren't enough care facility beds, and so you'll hear things such as people who are waiting for care facility beds currently taking up large numbers of beds in our acute care hospitals, which is happening across the province, certainly here. And so people end up not getting into a care facility as quickly as they ought, first of all. Second of all, with the policy that exists now of first available bed, means that people end up getting placed in care facilities that are outside their own communities. And you have situations like we heard about with Frances Albo and her husband in the Kootenays, where she had to be placed in a community away from her family, her husband, etc. So that's happening because we don't have those facilities in all the communities that we need. And I guess the other thing that doesn't get talked about very much and that I've been doing some work on is what happens to the spouses of someone who goes into a care facility whose dementia has developed further on into a later stage, and they are now at home in the community but still concerned because of all the changes that have been going on in terms of providing care. Will that bed still be there? Is somebody really looking after him? Do I need to be there to feed? You know, like there's so much stress on the caregiver, even though your partner's now in the facility. And so that's another issue that I think as a community, as a society, we have to look at the care of those spouses and daughters and sons who are now trying to make sure that, given the cuts and changes in our healthcare system, that what's happening in the care facility is adequate and should be more than adequate, right? I mean, from my point of view, as human beings who've arrived on this earth, we should have the right to have the best quality of life possible, and we shouldn't just be trying to solve these problems in terms of sort of minimal adequate care, but beyond that, much beyond that. And I just one other quick thing that relates to that issue is that I think that although we're short of all sorts of services, and there's no question, particularly if you look at where people live as they go further along with a dementia. But, you know, the other thing is that even if we had every service that we need, I think there's another problem, and that is that people who are using those services and their families, they have to have a say about what is best going to meet their needs. There has to be an assumption that people have the right to have a voice about how to do that. So we need to get, I think, beyond sort of a rule-bound administration of these services and to find and create the mechanisms that allow older adults and their families to have very specific control over how decisions are made about what happens to their own lives. So to me, that's another huge piece that we have to address.
This is what you were touching on earlier a bit in the early stages of people having access to resources where they can learn more about their condition and advocate for themselves for these improved services.
Absolutely. But also, you know, when we were talking earlier about people just getting older and we start to develop memory problems, right? And, you know, even for those of us as we get older who are not at this point don't appear to be moving in a direction of dementia, the fact of the matter is that we do start to have different needs, maybe some mobility issues, things like that. So I think not only for people who are at the early stages of the disease getting more active, but you'll see, well, I'm sure everyone can see across our province that there is any number of seniors organizations that are also really active around healthcare issues because they recognize as well that their ability to stay healthy also is impacted by whether or not they can get the supports and services they need. And we know now that, you know, looking after your brain, a healthy brain, really does require that you, you know, exercise, eat properly, all those things that socialize, those things that we know that make us healthy in general. And similarly to the medication issue that you raised, people being able to access the things that can keep them healthy is also something that is not often addressed directly as people age. And in fact, it means that people who have the ability, the dollars, the position in terms of geography where they live to access services or the financial wherewithal to have good food and to get exercise and those kinds of things, there's a differential there. Some people can do those things, other people can't, and I think we have to look at that as well.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Dawn.
No problem. Good to be here.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me that our paths crossed at Simon Fraser in the 60s.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Dawn Hemingway. She is the president of the BC Psychogeriatric Association and also chair of the social work program at the University of Northern British Columbia. She is one of the co-directors of the BC Network for Aging Research. And you're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.